Welcome to this week's Focus on Friday. I'm Robbie Frawley, and you're very welcome to the programme. My guest this week is a remarkable man who's had a remarkable journey across Dublin as he's reached out to his community with the gospel, but it didn't always look like that. My guest today is Noel Kenny from Liberty Church in Dublin. How are you, Noel?
I'm good. Hello, everybody.
It's great to have you with us. Thank you for joining
us.
Noel, I've only recently begun to get to know you.
Yeah.
And I've loved the journey. It's fascinating to see what God's done with you and to see how you're impacting lives of so many people in your community.
Mm.
But I want to go right back to little Noel, right back to the beginning.
Younger Noel, I'm still little.
I didn't want to say anything. So we're going to go right back then to younger Noel, all right? And find out a bit about that. You were born in central Dublin, yeah?
Yes, so born in Dolphin's Barn.
Okay.
And literally born in the flat where all my family was raised. So
really?
257 Dolphin House, right out of Dublin, eh? I'm one of 14 children.
No way.
Yeah, so I've 9 brothers and 4 sisters. So my mum had 8 boys of her own and 2 that she reared.
Wow.
And so big family. I'm the second youngest.
You're almost the baby of the family.
I'm way down the food chain, yeah.
Listen, was life tough? Because you get these pictures of what life was like in Dublin in the flats, and it was all community and all laugh, but life must have been tough.
Well, you know, it's a bit of a mixture. It's a bit of a mixture. Like, so growing up, so being the second youngest in the family, you know, some of the hardships of, like, you know, unemployment or lack.
Right.
My elder siblings would have experienced that more than me.
Right.
You know, like, our second youngest, so they would have been working, there would have been money coming out. So some of the stories they have is not some of my story because, you know, I got 3 presents at Christmas. They were lucky to get 1.
Gotcha.
You know, so, and then in the flats, the community aspect of it is, you know, even in church today, I know what community looks like. I know what people to sacrifice on behalf of others look like because of the flats, because we genuinely, and the people that I grew up with and their parents and wherever, they looked out for one another. You couldn't walk out of a block of air block without someone saying, "Get back up that block. Miss Kenny Noel is going out the block." You know,
right.
It was that sense of, you know, community, really. You know, everybody, you know, there's a respect of, like, there's even people today, I'd still call them Mr. and Mrs. I would never call them first name.
Isn't that funny? I think there was a respect for people in there. When I was growing up in Coolock, in those times, it was, "Young Frawley, when your dad gets home, I'm going to tell him what you're..." And you think, Mrs. McLaughlin's been out and she's caught me, you know. And I wasn't doing anything crazy. But they looked out for you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, some of my fondest memories of growing up in the flats, like, there used to be a Dalton House Development Association.
Right.
And that was a group of, you know, people from the flats that went around the flats every Friday, and they'd collect probably 20p from your mum or a pound or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And then they'd save that, come to the summer, and then there was a trip to Butlins. And then in the same summer, there would be a dinner and dance for your mums and dads out in Portmarnock. And the buses would come, you know, the buses would come. There was all this build up to it, you know, like, great anticipation, you know. And you know, be like, and then in that day, it was like, the whole saying was, "Everything is free in Butlins," meaning what they really meant was our parents would have to pay for to get in.
Of
and
all course,
that.
Yeah, yeah.
But the buzzword was, "Everything's free in Butlins." So so the buses arrive one day and we're all on the bus and we start singing those great anthems from communities, you know, "Everywhere We Go," you know, and singing all the way up. And I don't know whether you remember that one. Did you ever throw your granny off the bus, give her a push? You know, they were sung all the way up. And we got to Butlins the first time and "Everything's free in Butlins." And my youngest brother, Mark, like, he walked out of the shop. I don't know whether you remember. He used to sell Kodak cameras and all.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And my brother Mark was walking out with a handful of, his arms full of stuff and armbands on and "Kiss Me Quick" hat. And I'm like, Mark, rocks in his hand. And, "Mark, where are you after getting all that?" And he goes, "No, everything's free in Butlins." So Butlins was, it was like the locusts had descended on Butlins because it was, so we got barred.
No.
As a community, we got barred because we just, "Everything's free in Butlins," you know. So So next year we weren't allowed in. We had to send up a special envoy from the Development Association to get us back in for the following year. And then, like, at the flats was like when I was growing up, it was all about singing. That's what I remember more than that. Like, all them songs going up and down. Like, I remember, like, the girls playing ball against the wall with little tennis balls, and you had all these songs.
The rhymes, yeah, the songs.
You had all these, when you were playing skipping, the girls had these songs about, you know, skipping and toying, you know, like making swings around the lamppost. Everyone would sing, and that's, and even on a Sunday afternoon in the flat, so the flat's like about 6 or 7 blocks in U shapes, and then so each U shaped block is a block, we'd call that a whole block, and then the next one, you know, would be the same. But he used to be a man, he was like a Romany gypsy man. He used to come in every Sunday and he'd sing like operatic songs up the balconies.
No way.
And the women, the mams would throw over 10p's or whatever like that. And this man was genius because, like, when the money would come over, he'd still be able to sing while kicking us away from the money, you know? Because you'd see all the kids, like, trying to jump in and grab a bit. And then, like, so there was all this. And then on the dinner dance, I mentioned that for a reason, that then, like, your mum and dad would get dressed up. And when it was their night out to the Portmarnock golf club or something, I don't know what it was, but they'd come back singing, you know, they'd be singing Strangers in the Night, Frank Sinatra or something like that, and that was all there. And yet in the midst of all of that, there was huge unemployment, there was huge lack, there was no amenities, you know, kids like myself and my older brothers, like, left school younger, you know. And then in the middle of that, there was this, like, I would say compared to what was to come, it was petty crime. It was there, but it was petty compared to what was later on to come. So there was all that mixed up, you know, in the one thing. My overall memories of that era of my life was one of fun and one of, like, in eternal summers. When summers came, it was like it was summer forever.
Yeah.
And you'd done a million things, from swimming in the canal, jumping off the bridge.
See, a lot of that stuff doesn't happen anymore, does it?
No. Now,
is that because we didn't know what the canal was like? Or, I'm just thinking of the canal. Or people just go, I'm not going into that. I'm too above that now.
Exactly, yeah. I think, like, our start of our summer was, like, there used to be, like, what we call cellars in the flats. And people would put down, say, sofas that they were throwing out, and the corporation would come around at a certain time and take them all.
Yeah.
So our start of our summer was going down to the cellars, finding line other people threw out.
Yeah.
And we'd go and clear the bottom of the canal where we were going to be jumping off the bridge. We'd clear it of rocks and stones and bars and whatever, and then we'd lay carpet or lino down on it. And,
really?
And we'd know that's where to jump. So, like, that was all part of the adventure. And then as you got older, you get a bit more sophisticated and you're like, you know, you hear about diseases that rats bring and all that. And you're like, how did we even do that? Do you know what I mean?
But you wouldn't be allowed these days, would you?
No. You'd rarely. Sometimes down at the locks there now in Inchicore, in a good summer, you'd see the kids swimming.
It sounds like you had what an awful lot of people wanted but couldn't achieve, which was community.
Yeah.
And care. Even though there were difficult times.
Yeah, you were always to get, like all the games that we played, like, as kids, do you know what I mean? Like, was just right up until you're 12 or something like that.
Yeah,
you know,
it's not cool anymore.
But, like, there was something every night, you know, every night there was something, especially in spring and summer, you know, like, winter, like, people probably hibernate a bit and then come out in the spring again, like, oh, look at Johnny's after growing 4 foot tall or something like that. But, you know, like, them type of things. Yeah. But there was a togetherness. Like, I remember there was evictions back in the day, and, you know, people had to squat really to get some type of accommodation.
Yeah.
But when the sheriff would come to evict them, there'd be like 1,000 people, like, in the block, wouldn't even let the cars up.
Right.
They wouldn't be violent around, they'd just stand.
And then,
if they got in there, they'd have to get up the stairs. So you'd have about, like, the stairwell is like whatever, 6 or 7 foot wide, but you'd have like 200 or 300 people just standing shoulder to shoulder. And, like, when the sheriff would come in the night time, say they used to come like at 5 in the morning, so someone was on lookout. And they'd be out with their pots and pans and their whistles, and then everyone would come out and it was about justice. It wasn't about, you know, wanting to do anything wrong. It was about if this couple gets thrown out,
they've got nowhere to live.
And so there was all this, you know, sort of glue that held the community together, whether it was injustice or whether it was nights out at the Portmarnock or whatever. There was a togetherness. That's probably.
Do you miss that now that you're older with your own family and things?
I've 2 neighbours where I live now in a housing estate, And I remember when I moved from the flats with my family up to Ballyfermot,
yeah,
brand new house.
Yeah.
Like, we hadn't got stairs in the flats.
Right.
Like, we lived on the second, so we had to come down like 32 steps to get to the bottom in the flats.
Okay.
They were made
in
of,
the block.
Made of concrete.
Yeah, I remember.
We never walked. We never walked up and down the steps. We ran up.
Yeah.
And it was like 6 months into living in this house where my wife says, "No, will you stop running down the stairs?" And I'm like, "I'm running down the stairs."
14 steps on the way you
it
go.
Was just built into you, you know, like it was just built in. And do I miss it? Like, the neighbours on both sides of me, like, were both from, like, one was from Old Devonny Gardens, the other was from Ballyfermot, so we knew what community, what, like, we've no problems knocking into each other if we have anything that we need, or you know the rest of the estate I probably don't know anybody, you know. So that element of community that you would be so used to, you know, especially my kids are older now, so you're not out on the green at the
true you yeah know, you don't see your community because your kids are growing up and you've got, you know, they've got kids of their own or whatever.
Although COVID brought a bit of it to our estate, I'm sure, like many estates, like we had this, like, we never had bingo in our estate, but we had bingo during COVID.
Very
and,
interesting.
So that got like, no, you weren't sitting together, you're sitting on different but it did bring us all out. Oh, there's a hell yeah, you know.
It brought a sense of community and a sense of wanting to care for each other back again.
And we realised how much we'd missed
like
seeing people's faces type of thing.
What was your teenage years like?
Well, so I don't think I'd ever go back to my teenage years if that was an era.
Okay.
Not because of that and drastic, you know. I'm just so conscious of all the change that was going on.
Right.
How I was viewing myself, how I was viewing the world. I'm pretty all right. Like, I was never really picked on or bullied or anything like that because I had 9 brothers, you know.
Yeah, you're not.
And my
four
sisters were ninjas, you know what I mean? They don't mind the brothers. My sisters were the ninjas. And so I, you know, sort of, but hung out with the same group of people. I was still playing like Cowboys and Indians when I was 12. Do you know what I mean? I wasn't
just enjoying life.
Yeah, and the girl who's my wife now, she's the same age, but she would have been hanging around with the older girls and the older lads and all that. And even though she was the youngest in there, but she would have been in that bracket while I was still running around with like 2 little soldiers or something like this. And so growing up, probably 1979, like, heroin came into our community. So that little community that I described there that hadn't got a whole lot but had one another was now being torn apart, like, because families were fighting with families because someone was ripping someone off with drugs and this and that, you know. So, like, the whole thing just went to pot in some ways.
No pun intended.
There was no singing anymore, put it that way.
Right.
There was no singing anymore. That was way gone. And so in my block, that one of them blocks that that was like where all the activity of heroin was, young men and women 14, 15, which was 2 of my brothers ended up going on heroin, bringing madness into the family home, which we were never used to. We don't know what we know about all this stuff now. So I sort of separated myself from my own block, like hanging out with, and went around to the next block, which was the second block we called it. Good friends, played football, like just keeping that innocence as we could, and then got introduced to sniffing glue or gas.
Okay.
You know, smoking, then pot, and then gradually you'd see, as we were getting older, you'd see people getting snatched into this crazy world of heroin addiction. And so I met, like, one of my saving graces at the time was meeting my wife Sharon. Like, we were 40, well, I knew her since she was 7.
Right.
And I seen her when she was 7. She moved up to the flats when she was 7, I think. And seen her on the swings where our uncle, and she was eating a chocolate bar. And I remember she had glasses, little glasses and long hair and a little flowery dress and a bar of chocolate. I fell in love, and I keep saying to her, "I don't know what I fell in love with you or the bar of chocolate." Because we only got chocolate at Christmas, like, or Easter. There wasn't that like luxury in our house. Like, you got it at the appropriate time. Like, if it was anything in between, it means someone won the lotto or something like that. So seeing someone with a chocolate bar in the middle of August or something like that, I was like, "What's that?" And then we started hanging around with the same group of people, and we fell in love. That was it. And 41 years later, we're still together. And then when we were 16, we had a baby.
Right.
And I wouldn't recommend it to any 16-year-old. And so here we were, 2 kids, you know, with a baby. And so you had to grow up quick, you know, in that sense of responsibility and not knowing anything else, really.